bad. Now the boat won't float. I don't like it. I'm too proud to be home. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. We're not a working. We're not a working.
Hello, you're listening to WEFT, Champaign, Illinois, 90.1, in the heart of occupied Illiniwek territory. Stand by for some underwriting. Where is that button? Ah, here we go.
This hour program is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at Chenny Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon in Urbana. For more information, visit www.centralillinoisjwj.org. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WFT and Decatur attorney Bill Favor, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Favor proudly supports the World Labor Hour. The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. The Graduate Employees Organization Union, the GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice, both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WFT Community Radio. The Campus Faculty Association at the University of Illinois advocates for academic freedom, shared governance, and a strong faculty voice on campus. CFA is proud to support Community Radio and the World Labor Hour in support of strong unions. You can learn more about the CFA by visiting cfaillinois.org.
Howdy, folks. We're back here at the World Labor Hour. This is Bill Gorell. David Johnson is here.
Yes, I'm here.
Live, not just on CD. And we have Angela Bigham. Sorry. And today we have a guest in the studio, not just over the telephone. He's a local person, but he's worldwide. Well, I think very well known worldwide for his many writings and activism, and it is Dr. Francis Boyle of the University of Illinois Law School.
Well, thank you very much, David, Bill, and Angela, for having me on again here on WEFT, and especially because the University of Illinois' own WILL refuses to have me on as a matter of policy.
Oh, what?
Has blackballed me off of WILL for about the last 3 decades because of my different viewpoints. But let's put that one aside. At least WEFT is giving me a voice here. Yes, I've come to alert the community to a grave situation taking place at the University of Illinois College of Law on October 28th. The law school has invited in to give an endowed public lecture for which he'll probably be paid $5,000 to a law professor from Yale named Harold Coe. His nickname in Washington, D.C. is Killer Coe, and that is because he was the Clinton-Obama point man on their drone war policy. So that's the sobriquet. Where it came from, it's well known in Washington, D.C., Harold Killer Coe. Killer Coe, in addition, is a high-level official in the Mrs. Clinton presidential campaign election. He is giving a publicly endowed lecture at the College of Law on being a role model for lawyers in government service. So basically, he's going to come out here on October 28th and campaign for Mrs. Clinton's election 10 days later on November 8th and make the best pitch he can for everyone in this community to vote for Mrs. Clinton. Now, I'm a political independent. I always have been. But we have a very strict statute here in the state of Illinois prohibiting the use of any type of university resources for domestic partisan electoral purposes. Indeed, last year, the Illinois Inspector General, who has jurisdiction over this statute, sanctioned a university professor for using even one email communication related to a domestic campaign purpose. So this is clearly, in my opinion, requires an investigation by the Illinois Inspector General. So I would encourage everyone in the listening audience to contact the Office of the Illinois Inspector General, not the Attorney General, the Inspector General. She has a website. You can fill out a complaint and demand an investigation of why the College of Law is bringing a high-level Clinton presidential campaign official to come out here on October 28th, 10 days before the election, and effectively campaign for Mrs. Clinton in front of an enormous-sized audience. There'll be an hour lecture. Then there's going to be an hour reception afterwards. They're going to have TV, radio. The whole University of Illinois propaganda apparatus will be there to cover Killer Co. Making the best pitch he can to get Mrs. Clinton elected president. So, again, go to the website, Illinois Inspector General. That's October 28th. And file the complaint, Harold Killer Co., at the University of Illinois College of Law. Now,
is that K-O-L-B?
It's called K-O-H.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Right. He's Asian American.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
Now, I won't go through all of Killer Co.'s atrocities here, but he was Mrs. Clinton's lawyer, official lawyer, at the Department of State. And he was involved in every hideous atrocity, personally, that Mrs. Clinton inflicted all over the world.
So basically he was providing legal cover and legal justification?
Basically legal cover and legal justification. Not really legal advice, but okay. Cover and justification. Indeed, if you want to see a picture of Killer Co., you can go to the Google Mrs. Clinton BlackBerry, and you'll see her on that government plane working her BlackBerry. It's iconic. And in the back to the right is Killer Co. He also advised her on her emails.
Oh.
Right. Benghazi, the drone. Now, he got the nickname Killer Co. because he was the point man, not only for Clinton, but also Obama, on the drone murder policy. As we know, this drone murder policy has exterminated well over 5,000 Muslims, Arabs, Asians, men, women, and children of color, including, last count I read, five United States citizens, as well, and in that number, one American citizen child, Mr. Al-Awlaki's 16-year-old son. And The Intercept series pointed out that despite the lies told by the Obama-Clinton people, he was deliberately targeted and murdered, this boy.
And he wasn't involved in any kind of terrorist activity or anything. He was just going to visit relatives in Yemen, I believe.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And when the State Department was asked about this, I think the spokesperson said something like, well, he should have chosen a better father. But Intercept has...
This sounds like gangland behavior.
Right. Yeah, I should have chosen... Right.
Oh, no. Oh, well, it's Richard worse Walker. Than gangland behavior because, you know, I grew up on the south side of Chicago with the Al Capone mob, and we know that the Chicago mafioso do not kill women and children. They have a code. They have their honor. But Killer Co. and Obama and Clinton are worse than the mafia. I mean, this would be like the college law. It's even worse than asking Al Capone to come in and give his justification for the St. Valentine's Day massacre. This is worse. This man, Killer Co., is personally responsible for murdering well over 5,000 people, including five U.S. citizens and an American child under the age of 18. Killer Co. has committed Nuremberg crimes against peace, Nuremberg crimes against humanity, Nuremberg war crimes, like the Nazis, not the same scale. In addition, felonies under United States law. He has lied to Congress over Libya. He was the only lawyer in the entire Obama administration who would get up and testify before the Senate that the Obama war of aggression against Libya didn't violate the War Powers Resolution.
Yeah.
Even the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, said it didn't pass the straight face test. Do you have to take a break?
No, not at all.
Oh, all right. Now what happened? What happened here? At the beginning of last summer, the College of Law circulated to the entire faculty on our email system that they had a, quote, lock, unquote, on Killer Coe coming to give this specially endowed lecture. Now, at that point, I then circulated to the faculty massive documentation of all the war crimes, crimes against humanity, verging on genocide that Killer Coe committed. They were fully informed of that. Indeed, Killer Coe is so bad. Back in 1983, he voluntarily went to work for the Reagan administration.
Mm-hmm.
When Reagan was perpetrating his atrocities all over the world.
And especially, you know, in Central America.
Of course. And as you know, you can tell those of us
death
in our community.
Death squads and dictatorship support.
Right. He was working for Reagan, doing the exact same thing for Reagan from 1983 to 1985. You know, so he's an equal opportunity war criminal for both the Republicans and the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not one person on the College of Law supported me, and indeed several objected in the strongest terms possible. Killer Coe was such a great guy. Now, they had all of last academic year to bring Killer Coe out here to give this endowed lecture, and they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, they have all of this academic year to bring Killer Coe out here to give this lecture. And when are they bringing him in? 10 days before the election. It's clear this is being done by the College of Law to help Mrs. Clinton get elected president.
You know, you mentioned earlier about the Clinton email thing. Of course, a lot of people are trying to dismiss it, saying, oh, there's nothing there. It's just Republicans trying to make a mountain out of a molehill. But, you know, for me, and you could maybe elaborate on this, Professor Boyle, is that, you know, there is something there. There is a scandal there because at the very least, she did this on her own private email server account to avoid Freedom of Information Act requests. And is there more than that as well?
Just as he walked out, Paul Muth and I were discussing interviews I gave with Dennis Bernstein that appear here on this radio, Flashpoint. And I gave Dennis a very extensive interview on the Clinton emails, which I'm sure you can call up in your records. It wasn't that long ago.
Okay.
But basically, yeah, I was originally hired here to teach criminal law. I taught criminal law for a good 8 years. Yes, Mrs. Clinton clearly engaged in a conspiracy to defraud the United States government. And I went through all the elements of that on Dennis's show.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to go through that here. But Killer Coe admitted he advised Mrs. Clinton probably how to, you know, lie about it for all I know.
Mm-hmm.
But conspiracy to defraud the United States government is a felony.
Mm-hmm.
And she clearly conspired with Killer Coe and others. On this private email server, and he admitted that he advised her on his mm-hmm. emails. He then lied by saying, well, she's covered by attorney-client privilege, so I can't say what advice I gave her. Baloney. Ken Starr decided in court cases in the Clinton scandal, all the way up to the highest levels, where that government lawyers do not have an attorney-client relationship with government officials. They are paid by us. And that if a government official wants an attorney-client relationship with attorney-client confidences, they have to go out and hire their own lawyer at private expense. Mrs. Clinton knows that. She graduated from Yale Law School, which is how she knows of Killer Coe. He teaches there. That's why she recruited him to work for him as her and the State Department's lawyer. Now, so the College of Law had, from the beginning of last summer, not this summer, last summer, and all this year, 2 years, to have Killer Coe come out here and give this lecture in support of Mrs. Clinton's war crimes, crimes against humanity, defrauding the United States government, murdering United States citizens, and they're bringing him out here 10 days before the election. It's very clear what's going on.
That timing's everything, you know.
Of course. And as we know, obviously the Clinton campaign sees the university as a target-rich community because of all the students here,
mm-hmm.
all the Bernie Sanders supporters here, and that's why he's coming out here. But he, you know, even putting that one aside, and I think that creates a prima facie violation of Illinois law. It's reprehensible. The college law was on notice from me. And indeed, all the atrocities he had committed for Reagan. Indeed, when he was later hired by Yale Law School, he used to brag to his Yale Law students that he had written Reagan's memorandum supporting the legality of the invasion of Grenada.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a joke. I was told that by a former student at Yale Law School who's now a law professor. Well, as Paul Buth and others would tell you, at that time I was leading the opposition to Reagan's invasion of Grenada. Such little that it was, but I was leading it. So I go all the way back with Killer Cove to 1983. Indeed, he was behind me at Harvard Law School.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. So now you might ask, well, you know, why is the law school doing this after I reject it? Well, one, they support Mrs. Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
They support Killer Cove. They want to see Mrs. Clinton get elected 10 days later. And basically, the law school is run by a Yale Law School mafia, like Mrs. Clinton and Killer Cove. Our last dean, who was fired for ethical improprieties by the provost, mm-hmm. and got us sanctioned by the American Bar Association and fined $200,000, $250,000, unprecedented legal education. He was part of the Yale Law Mafia. He hired all sorts of Yale Law Mafia. Our current dean is a Yale Law Mafia guy. So the Yale Law Mafia want to bring one of their own out here and basically bootlick it, right? Figuring that if Mrs. Clinton becomes president, according to this former student of Killer Cove, he's gunning to become either Attorney General or Secretary of State, which is why he's doing all this work for Mrs. Clinton.
Oh, boy.
And so the Yale Law Mafia running the University of Illinois College of Law are figuring, well, sure, if Mrs. Clinton and Killer Cove get in there, there'll be some nice slot for us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's what is really going on here. It's completely rotten, corrupt, in my opinion, illegal. So in addition to the complaint that I'm asking you to file with the Illinois Inspector General in Springfield, not the Attorney General, I'm asking people to come out for a rally on October 28th against Killer Cove. At the law school, there's a nice courtyard in the front north end, the middle of the building, with windows inside.
Okay.
And he's speaking at 12 noon. So I think we should all show up there about a quarter to 12.
Okay. What day of the week is that, by the way?
It's a Friday.
Okay.
I blacked out from 11 to 2 on my schedule. But I would encourage people to show up about a quarter to 12 in the courtyard. And we need there, in particular, blown-up cardboard six-foot-tall posters of all the women and children that Killer Cove has murdered, including Mr. Alwaki's 16-year-old son, an American child. I would say, I had three sons. I say an American baby.
Well, we're already, they're already doing what Trump says he wanted to do, which is basically go after the families.
That's right. That's what Killer
Cove. But of course, he was totally criticized over that.
Right. Clinton, Obama, and Obama was behind me at Harvard.
They're not
Law
crude enough to say it.
Right.
Maybe.
Obama was behind me at Harvard Law School, too. Indeed, we even had the same jurisprudence teacher, Roberto Unger, who publicly said on the BBC, quote, "Obama is a disaster," unquote.
Oh, wow.
So that's not just me. So, yeah, but Clinton is Yale Law School mafia. That's the people she's recruiting. That's Killer Cove. Those are the people who run this law school. And I wanted to say here about the law school. This law school, I started teaching here in August of 1978 under Dean John Cribbett hired me. We're the number 15 law school in the country. And we have now had one corrupt dean and acting dean after another. Indeed, as I said, it was so bad that the American Bar Association formally condemned us and issued a reprimand and fined us, I guess it was $250,000, and condemned the last two deans, Hurd and Smith, and the last two acting deans, and in a footnote, the last dean before Hurd, Mengler. So you've had the last five deans of the University of Illinois College of Law condemned by the American Bar Association for completely unethical, arguably illegal activity and fined. This is the type of law school we have here today. And to cap it all off, they are now inviting in this war criminal, this monster covered with blood, a murderer of American citizens and a murderer of an American baby.
Wow.
To give this endowed lecture.
You know, we're going to, of course, you're going to keep us updated on this because, you know, we will announce this over our public service announcements, you know,
right.
But probably definitely in the month of October. So this is
right.
Of course,
you're
the end
on
October.
My special Killer Co. Mailing
yes.
list. And I believe
code.
The...
as long as it's not a hit list. It's
well,
a mail list.
It could be. College of Law would love to get rid of me. Indeed, I've had three deans who've tried. So,
oh, okay.
I understand the AWARE people here in town, they do very good work,
mm-hmm.
and they are organizing the protests. They've asked me to speak. I will be there to denounce Killer Co. and denounce this rotten, corrupt, unethical, illegal law school for inviting him out here to get Mrs. Clinton elected president 10 days later. In violation of an Illinois statute, yes.
Well, Professor Boyle, I want to thank you so much for coming in, and definitely keep us updated, and we'll report on the developments.
Would you also please repeat the date, time, and place?
Yes, it's October 28th, 2016, 10 days before the election. It's a Friday. And I'm encouraging people to show up at about 11:45, 15 minutes before his public lecture for a peaceful, nonviolent protest and demonstration against Killer Co. and this rotten, corrupt, despicable faculty at the College of Law who are holding out a war criminal as a model for the role that lawyers play in government service. You know, Elliot Richardson was ahead of me at Harvard Law School. And I met Richardson. We had some of the same teachers. And when Nixon ordered him to fire Archie Cox, the Watergate special prosecutor.
Saturday Night Massacre.
Who was also a teacher at Harvard Law School when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Richardson resigned. That is the model we should have for lawyers in government service, Elliot Richardson. And instead, what we are having here is a legal enabler for war crimes, crimes against humanity, Nuremberg crimes against peace, felonies, and murders. And the College Law knows this because I told them. And they don't care. Indeed, they want him here so they can bootlick him and get a job when Mrs. Clinton becomes president and Killer Co. becomes either Secretary of State or Attorney General or some other job. They figure there's something in it for them.
Sure. Okay, thanks again, Professor Boyle. And Bill, I guess we're going to take a short break here.
Yes, we are, folks. This is Jackson Brown.
For a week or a month or a year, with the blood and the ink of the headlines and the sound of the crowd in my ear, you might ask what it takes to remember when you know that you've seen it before, where a government lies to a people and a country is drifting to war. And there's a shadow on the faces of the men who send their guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and TV, you hear one thing again and again, how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend.
But who are the ones that they call our friends? These governments killing their own. Are the people who find they can't take anymore? And they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone. And their lives in the balance. There are people under fire. There are children at the cannons. There is blood on the wire. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who fanned the flames of the wars that are fought in places we can't even say the names. They sell us the president the same way they sell us our clothes and our cars. They sell us everything from youth to religion the same time they sell us our wars. I wanna know who the men in the shadows are. I wanna hear somebody asking them why. It can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are. But they're never the ones to fight or to die. And their lives in the balance. There are people under fire. There are children at the cannons. There is blood on the wire. There are lives in the balance. People under fire. Children at the cannons. There are.
Folks, Jackson Browne. With, what was the name of that
Lives
song?
Lives in the Balance.
Lives in the Balance. I think that was a hit, wasn't it? I think I remember
hearing
it quite a bit. Jackson Browne had a lot of big hits over the years. And, it's time for public service announcements. Go ahead, Dave.
Okay. Let's see. I guess coming up here, in a couple of weeks, for 10 years, labor and environmental groups have been coming together to advance policies and programs leading to a just transition in energy policy. In practice, this means moving towards a sustainable economy based on the creation of green industries and, more importantly, increasing the number of green good-paying jobs. Bringing together major labor unions and environmental organizations, the Blue-Green Alliance has been at the forefront of efforts in support of a just transition. And you can find out more about the Blue-Green Alliance and how you can support its efforts by attending an upcoming presentation with Speaker Tom Conway of the Teamsters Union. He's a Midwest Regional Director of the Blue-Green Alliance. And his topic is going to be the Blue-Green Alliance at 10 years, where we've been and where we are going. And that's going to be at the Chenny Murray Foundation, 1209 Oregon, in our Urbana. There's free parking available, and that's on Saturday, September 17th from 2 to 4 p.m., and we'll be having more updates on this. And this is sponsored by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, as well as a whole bunch of other long list of groups here, including Representative Carol Ammons. So, tune out for that, and we'll keep you posted on that as we get closer to the date.
Okay, folks, hey. Here's a programming note here. We have jazz on WEFT. You know, if you like that, you can tune into jazz on WEFT 90.1 FM every Monday through Friday from 9 to 11:30 a.m. and Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. A variety of community members share their knowledge of jazz and bring you the most jazz you will hear on the radio in East Central Illinois. But by the way, if you live west of Champaign, you can get a lot of jazz and blues at WGLT also. And beyond that, I'm going to kick off the semester with a Japanese festival highlighting food, drinks, arts, and Asian culture on August 28th from 2 to 7 p.m. This will be on the grounds of Japan House and the University Arboretum. Experience Japanese food and drink, taiko drum performances from Hoetsu Taiko, Tsugaru Shamisen performer from Japan, Michiyoshi Sato, martial arts demonstrations, fashion shows, shiatsu massage, tea ceremonies, ikebana displays, or is it Ikebana? I don't know. Bonsai demonstrations and displays and more. Rain or shine, all events are free. Tickets for food and drink will be available for purchase, and I helped pour the exposed aggregate sidewalk.
Did you put your initials or your name in the concrete?
Well, it's hard to do on this exposed aggregate because this is one that's got all the little rocks.
Ah, okay.
See, what you do is you put a retardant on it, and then the underneath concrete sets up real good, and then you hit it with a pressure washer.
Okay.
There you
go. So it's kind of like rough exterior, terrazzo in a way.
It was real popular in the 70s, and actually I spent most of my career taking it out. That's the only time we ever put it in.
Okay. All right.
For the rare exposed aggregate experience.
Okay. All right. Okay. Tune in this Saturday and every Saturday from 2 to 3 p.m. for another sports show with host fellow worker Neil Parthen on 104.5 WRFU and live at WRFU.org. And also, this Sunday and every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m., tune in for Labor's Worldview TV at Comcast Channel 6. And live at UrbanaPublicTelevision.org. And coming up this Sunday is the first in a five-part series about the 9/11-2001 attacks. This Sunday is going to be part one of 9/11 Press for the Truth, the story about the Jersey girls, the families of some of the survivors who questioned the official story that was propagated by the Bush administration and went on to pressure Congress and the media to cover this, and eventually they got the 9/11 hearings as a result of this. But anyway, I don't want to spoil the plot, but, they weren't satisfied with the outcome of those 9/11, commission, investigations. But anyway, and then following the parts one and two of those, this Sunday and the following Sunday, the next Sundays will be a two-part series about 9/11 mysteries, showing you some of the, scientific, and personal witness facts that happened on the day. And, last but not least, on September 25th will be the show Rethink 9/11, which is put out by Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth.
And people don't forget that that these various episodes of things like that, other local shows such as the video version of News from Neptune and so on, will live forever on the UPTV YouTube channel. So you can always go back and check on a lot of the wonderful work that these people have been doing.
Okay.
Also, Catholic Charities Food Pantry in Tolono is open to all in need every Friday. You must be 18 or older and show a photo ID. You may come to the pantry twice a month for food. The food pantry is located at St. Patrick's Parish, 212 East Washington Street in Tolono.
So if you're hungry in Tolono, that's a place to go. All right, folks, I kind of randomly draw these local announcements out of the box just for the heck of it.
Okay.
Which is
I know you've tended to pick that one about the Japanese cultural thing because of your exposed aggregate handiwork there, Bill.
No, actually, I went for it for all the difficult-to-pronounce names.
Okay. Well, practice makes perfect. Okay, I guess there's been a lot going on in the news this week. To start with, the continuing boycott of Schnucks grocery store. I'm starting to think there's something fishy going on at Schnucks, and I'm not talking about the seafood department. Sorry, but Girl Scouts and Salvation Army Red Kettle Ringers, no more posting up outside of Schnucks. A week ago, customers posting the Schnucks grocery store chain's Facebook page mostly had questions about, well, groceries. About that is not getting certain items like produce and frozen items, as well as some stuff being perished, evidently. Well, anyway, this changed this week after news broke that the friendliest, supposedly the Schnucks logo, friendliest stores in town, are banning all solicitors, including cookie-selling Girl Scouts and bell-ringing Salvation Army fundraisers. And while you might have to wait for Christmas or cookie season to notice the lack of nonprofits outside, the ban will have an immediate and conspicuous effect on the locations where union workers protesting the store's unfair labor practices have been picketing and handing out leaflets. Schnucks spokesperson Paul Simon tells the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the change is designed to maintain and promote a safe, attractive, clutter-free shopping environment for our customers. But shoppers are accusing the grocery store chain of abandoning needy nonprofits in a move to keep union workers from protesting. Schnucks' recent decision to lay off about 200 union warehouse workers and then replace them with non-union scab workers. So anyway, I guess the Schnucks Facebook page has been getting a lot of postings of complaining former customers and some current customers. So we'll see. We'll keep you updated on how things develop.
That is their property, though. I mean, what's the problem?
One of the big problems is with this is that there is no public it's very hard to have a public place where you can reach people in any way at all. It used to be when downtown Champaign was the place to go shop, every store was on a public sidewalk.
And that was the case nationwide.
That's right. And you could not, unless somebody was being somehow really obnoxious or something, you could not bar people from handing out literature or so on and so forth. Whereas now, also, too, if you look at all the factories and many places of other employment, like warehouses and such, they have a huge buffer zone of parking lots, which helps prevent you from sitting in and taking over the facility. Like back in the 30s when they had the great sit-in strikes, people could actually throw food and water into the plant,
mm-hmm.
you know, from the street. The sidewalk.
Yeah.
And, so this is a huge problem in the United States. That's like, how many times have we gone out somewhere to do something? We have to stay, you know, like a Walmart and we're out on the street and people are driving by and we're like 500 feet from the store.
Yeah. In fact, when there was the Walmart protest a couple of Thanksgivings ago on Black Friday, their vicious treatment of people, their employees who try to unionize. They came up to us initially and tried to claim that a public sidewalk was their property, threatened to call the police, and we mm-hmm. told them, go ahead, call the police. They never did. They did finally call the police later when we had a delegation of about 12 protesters go up to the store to hand the management basically a list of demands. But the police, it's a waste of their time. But no, getting back to your question, this is an injustice Schnucks is doing against their warehouse workers. I mean, basically this greedy corporation has fired a bunch of unionized employees so they can bring in low-paid non-union workers to do work so that they can make more profits. So, you know, I don't care about their private property. In fact, you know what? There's too much concern, I think, this country for private property as opposed to, you know, humans' lives and, the very general well-being of society. So that's just my two cents.
Well, go ahead.
It's all about stuff these days.
Yeah.
You go back to P.J. Prudhon and his early anarchist writer and his idea of property as theft,
mm-hmm.
which, by the way, he has a particular definition of property as opposed to possession.
Mm, okay.
All right. Property is something that you would own, have complete control over, and no matter whether you use it or not, okay, you can leave it to anybody you want to when you die. You can sell it. All right. Now, one of the big problems back in Proudhon's day, it was an agricultural society. And you would have absentee landowners. You still have these problems like in South America, Central America, Africa, many other places where they had large private plantations. And his idea was that is property. We have permanent control over it, even after death to some extent. However, he thought it was fine to have a possession. That's like I can have an electric guitar as long as I use it.
Mm-hmm.
But when
and
I...
the house you live in.
Right. The house you live in, the car you drive, all of these things can be your what you might call private possessions. But as soon as you don't use it, you lose it,
mm-hmm.
literally. And when you die, it goes back to the rest of society to be parceled out in some equitable manner.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Also in some more local news, a federal judge has ordered the Illinois State Board of Elections to allow Dr. David Gill to appear on the November 8th ballot as an independent candidate in the 13th Congressional District for U.S. Congress. After collecting only 8,593 of the 10,754 valid petition signatures that was required, he needed to earn a ballot spot on the state law. Gill challenged the requirement in federal court. The Bloomington physician and former Democratic congressional candidate argues that the requirement is unconstitutional because it's out of line with what's required of major party candidates, the Democrats and Republicans for Congress, and independent candidates seeking other offices. A group of voters from the 13th District joined Gill in the lawsuit. While not ruling on the overall merits of the case, U.S. District Judge Sue Myerscough issued the order late Thursday morning, a day before the Elections Board is scheduled to certify the ballot, because Gill showed he would suffer irreparable harm if he was excluded, and because the state failed to show a compelling reason for leading him off the ballot. Gil last ran as a Democrat in 2012, losing to Republican U.S. Representative Ronnie Davis, Taylorville, by less than 1,000 votes. That's less than 1% of the vote in a three-way race. Arguing on Gil's behalf, Springfield attorney Sam Kamen noted that his client had to collect nearly 15 times as many signatures as either the Democrat or Republican candidate.
Yes, our ballot access laws in this country are pretty ridiculous. And that will be shown in the debates coming up, the presidential debates, which will feature the Democrat and the Republican nominees and probably nobody else.
Yes, and if you want to try to change that, go to rootsaction.org. They've got an online petition that's already collected close to 1 million signatures demanding that the Commission on Presidential Debates include Dr. Jill Stein of the Green Party and former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party for a four-way debate.
Right, and something that I found extremely interesting during this election is I have not seen any Clinton yard signs.
None.
At all. Or stickers.
Right.
I've seen a lot of Bernie stickers on cars.
I've seen a ton of Bernie Sanders
yard all over
signs
the place.
Too, before the last primary election, yeah.
And in,
you see some.
Yeah, in Bement, the town where I'm from, where I am also currently working building sidewalks for school children. It's for the children, folks.
Yes.
They got a special grant from the government. Wasn't that nice of the government to do that for us and be meant? Make safe sidewalks for children.
Yeah.
Including the blind bumps on the end so that any blind children we have don't walk in front of cars.
Yeah, that's what government should be for.
That's right, and that's what they're doing. But anyway, I have seen – the only signs I have seen is one Gary Johnson sign and – two Trump signs.
Okay.
I mean, this is just bizarre, man.
Yeah, Piatt County, I mean, it's, you know.
Well, I mean, but I'm not seeing hardly any signs for anybody anywhere.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I'm not seeing signs in Champaign.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least the streets I drive on. I remember in past years, I would see signs all over the place.
Yeah. Well, that's probably going to change the closer we get to the election, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know, man.
But, yes, it's going to be interesting. I mean, the thing is that currently, almost 50, it's like 40, get this number correct, about 45% of the American voters consider themselves independents, that they don't really care for either the Democrat or Republican parties. Mm-hmm. And, currently, as far as registered voters, I mean, it's only around a little over 50% of the American public, adult public, that are registered to vote. I mean, there is total dissatisfaction with the current system, and it has been for a while now, but it's building. I mean, we got two of the most unpopular candidates ever running for president. I mean, this is just showing this crisis of democracy that we have.
Right.
I mean, it's even questionable whether we have a real democracy in this country.
Right, so a lot of people won't be voting.
Yes, yes.
Well, I mean, Dave, and this is something, and I've heard it from people, and it's a meme that's been pushed by conservatives for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've even heard it from like relatives of mine. And that is that, and Republicans love this because the United States is not a democracy. The United States is a republic.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Well, I think it seems questionable.
Right. But see, it's obvious right there, and it's this stupid Frank Luntz crap that I am so sick of. I mean, he is so insulting.
Who is Frank Luntz?
Frank Luntz is a longtime Republican, communication consultant.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, his equivalent on the Democratic side would be, George Lakoff.
Okay.
Except they're not really equivalent.
Okay.
Okay. George Lakoff, I don't agree with a lot of his stuff quite often, but he is a true academic.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Frank Luntz is it's typical. I mean, most Republicans basically are grifters. You know, they're selling their books or selling services. Frank Luntz, everybody should have ignored Frank Luntz back in 1996, I believe it was, when he talked about how great the Republicans' contract for America was.
You mean contract on America?
Yeah. Well, see, the only thing is the voters extremely politically engaged cognoscenti, more or less, even realized it existed.
Yeah.
And it didn't, he said that he had data that claimed that it would be backed by all these people, and he was being being fraudulent.
But it got lots of corporate media play. I remember that back then.
Right.
And, you know, that was the year, 96, when the Republicans took back control of the House.
Right. The first time since 1946 in 50 years.
Yes.
And Taft-Hartley Act.
Right. But the thing is that the reason that was because Bill Clinton was elected president in 1992, and you had a majority, Democrats in the House and the Senate, and in those 2 years, things did not improve for working people at all. In fact, you had the passage of the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, which ended up losing 12 million good-paying union jobs that moved to Mexico and other places offshore to sweatshop labor.
Yeah.
And so, basically, you had an extremely low voter turnout that year, and a lot of these Republicans got elected because of that. And we're seeing the same pattern repeating itself, you know, to this day. I mean,
that,
the worst.
That kind of started it off then. I mean.
Yeah, the contract with America was actually 1994.
Oh, 94.
Yeah,
okay. Oh, that would have been the off year congressional elections
yes.
that set up the 1996 Congress.
Yes.
Now, you see, there's a pattern here, and I think a lot of people are looking at it like, well, you know, the base doesn't get excited in off-year elections. Yeah, the base doesn't get excited in the off-year elections because you spent the first 2 years
screwing
of your
them.
Term, screw, yeah, at least totally ignoring your base, if not actively working against them.
Yes.
And that is why the Democrats, I mean, it's amazing that they still exist as a party, but on the other hand, neither party ever really delivers on what their base wants. Because once you deliver that, then you don't have it to dangle in front of them like a carrot.
Well, not just that, but you know, what the American people want and what the corporate ruling class want in this country are always at odds. You know,
I was just thinking, how about nobody vote?
And well, then they'll just cruise in there and say, we got a mandate, you know.
Yeah, well, see, I there is a lot, and a lot of people I greatly respect, you know, locally and in the larger left-wing milieu.
Mm-hmm.
Are totally anti-voting. It only encourages them. It gives, and basically when you vote, you're giving the system a mandate. But I don't know, Dave, you use this metaphor quite often. It's one of the tools. And as far as I'm concerned, it is the master poll in the United States where, and if I think of my vote as trying to pull the, political spectrum of the United States back to the left.
Basically in favor of working people.
Right, by voting for Green instead of a Democrat in Illinois. Which I also have to say, I do have the luxury of not worrying about electing Donald Trump because Illinois will never go for I don't think it will.
Bill, don't matter. I'm beginning to see this more and more as a scam. I really do. You know, the Clintons and the Trumps go back, I mean, 30 years as friends, you know. And I mean, this ridiculous crap that, you know, Donald Trump barks out. I mean, I swear to God that they got together and planned the Clintons and Trump planned this all out, you know, basically to ease, you know, Hillary Clinton's coronation as president of the United States. I mean, I have no proof for this. It's just a speculation by, you know, even more than speculation. But boy, I tell you, sometimes I wonder about it.
There was a big phone call between Bill Clinton and Donald Trump not long before he announced, number
mm-hmm.
one. You know, number two, that I'm going by the theory that was put out by a former staffer of a some kind of political action committee. These things are getting so confusing now. But some group that was somehow financially supporting Donald Trump that is now defunct. And she said it was explained to her that basically he wanted a double digit in the polls, somewhere, you know, around 12-15%. You know, Jeb would probably get the nomination or somebody else would. But Trump would get a big boost in popularity and so on and so forth.
Another reality show.
Right.
Reality show.
And,
yes. Yeah, indeed. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
But. So anyway, I guess another story here. Yesterday, the Department of Justice announced that it would begin steps to end the use of private prisons at the federal level. Studies have shown that private prisons are far more violent than regular prisons for both inmates and guards alike. And we mean, say, regular prisons, we mean publicly owned prisons. Asked me declined to answer the questions, though, about reducing the criminal justice system's reliance on incarceration and the use of publicly run prisons as a form of social, basically the ail to all our social problems. I mean, over the years, they've been using the war on drugs as a means of arresting people on nonviolent charges. Oftentimes, some of these people end up serving, you know, 20, 30 years, or at least sentenced to that much. But anyway, meanwhile, Good Jobs First Research Director Phil Phil Matera points out at Dirt Diggers Digest that the contracting out of work at public prisons often has had been bad results for taxpayers and inmates alike. Case in point, in Michigan in 2013, Governor Rick Snyder gave Aramac a three-year contract worth about $150 million covering the state's correctional facilities. The plan eliminated some 370 state jobs and was supposed to save taxpayers $12 million a year. Instead, it led to a nightmare situation in which Aramac was found to be serving maggot-infested food and employing...
Is that Aramac or Aramark?
Aramark, I'm sorry, Aramark. Yeah. Thank you, Bill.
That which is this company is huge. It supplies hospitals, yes. School systems,
food service. Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm. It's a huge, gigantic company, and
yes, but their employees are low paid, have no benefits, and are
right.
poorly trained. Some who fraternized with prisoners and smuggled in contraband. These problems were described at great length in thousands of state documents obtained by the Detroit Free Press through an open records request. And one of those documents was an email message from the state official in charge of the contract, saying he was quote at my wit's end.
Dave, this is a really good example here. Low paid people. That's how they're getting by, is smuggling in things.
Yes.
To the prisoners. And this is what I'm saying about like police and other public safety people in general. People, not just public safety, but people who have responsibility for the welfare of other human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Those people should be very well compensated, and they should be very, very professional.
Yes.
You know, like that's why we have doctors with their professional qualifications and their creeds and so on, and nurses. Nurses who are, you know, they're not greatly compensated, but they're more highly compensated than the person who sweeps the floors.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's because they take care of the people. And can affect their health and their well-being. And I think it's very important that anybody in those situations, prison guards, police officers, military commanders, and so on and so forth, be, very professional people, you know, in every way possible, in their training, in their intelligence, in, whatever they have to swear to, like whatever oaths they have to swear to their profession and all of that, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's because they're dealing with human beings.
Yes.
And
okay, Bill,
Dave,
made our midpoint here at the Labor Hour.
Right. And we're going to play some local music.
With all of your money, your poor can be fed. You stall around and you flirt with disaster, and never really caring just what comes after. Well, your black star dying, but your back.